Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It is 5 minutes after the hour. So glad you're with us today. Bill Arnold here in studio. Yet another day of not trying to be popular, and I think it's working. If you live in Los Angeles, they say that is the most stressful commute in the country. And it's not going to get easier with the World Series starting there tonight. Temperature around 100 degrees at game time. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be a great series. I know I'm going to be watching. But if you live in Los Angeles, they say that of the 27 cities that they surveyed, L.A. has the longest commute, which stresses drivers out. Washington, D.C. has the longest commute time of also Washington, D.C., where Rob Bluey lives, has the longest commute time of 60 minutes. Salt Lake City came in last with an average commute of over 40 minutes. Des Moines, Iowa was ranked as the city with the least stressful commute. So to all of our friends in Des Moines, way to go. Drivers say commute times rank as a top concern when considering a job offer. So let's start with Nehemiah chapter 8, verse 10. The joy of the Lord is my strength. There we go. What a great thought for the day. We've have a great show this morning. We have Rob Bluey coming up. He was recently at a dinner with Donald Trump at the Heritage Foundation dinner. We're going to get a firsthand experience what that was like. And then also my friend Mitch Glazer, who I spoke to last week. I begged him to stick around and talk a little bit about how Christians view Israel and how we're supposed to think about what's going on in Israel and how to pray for people in Israel. So he's going to bring that on as well in this hour. So we're going to take a little break at 6 minutes after the hour and then talk to Rob Bluey. What a great morning. Good morning. 7 minutes after the hour. Boy, my reading and comprehension is really bad. It's been that way since grade school, though. I was looking at that story about stressful commutes. L.A. has the most stressful commute, but Washington, D.C. has the longest commutes, probably because of the motorcades that live in that town. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning. It's great to be with you, Bill.
There are a lot of motorcades in D.C., aren't there?
Oh, certainly. Not a day goes by where I don't think somebody's commute is affected in some way by a motorcade.
Wouldn't you personally love to travel by motorcade? Wouldn't that be kind of nice?
Oh, I mean, that would be ideal to think you could bypass all of the congestion and breeze through red lights. I mean, it sounds delightful, but I don't think I'll be in that position anytime soon, Bill.
Yeah. So, Rob, let's talk about the big Heritage Foundation dinner last week with President Trump.
Yes. So the Heritage Foundation has an annual meeting called President's Club, and it's where some of our top members and supporters come together in Washington, D.C. We had a great lineup last week. I had the opportunity to interview EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt for last Tuesday's lunch, and then for dinner, as you mentioned, we had President Trump join us for a speech which touched on a range of topics, was billed as a tax reform speech, and really that's where the meat of his comments were geared toward, but really energized the crowd. I mean, it was the first time that he has spoken to a Heritage Foundation event, and, you know, he is somebody who I think it was appropriate to get into the details on so many big policy issues. And really, I think, talk about where our culture is going, but then also talk about what needs to happen, because as we've talked about on the show before, there's not a lot of legislative accomplishments that this Congress has been able to achieve, and this is certainly one where the president wants to get it done.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about your conversation with Scott Pruitt from the EPA.
You know, Scott Pruitt is somebody who's just doing some amazing work at the EPA. Even those who might not agree with the direction he's going, I think that the thing that was so inspiring to hear Scott Pruitt say is that when he took the reins at EPA, there was a lack of urgency, a lack of purpose, and I think he's really tried to bring that as a great leader, manager, to that organization, hold people accountable, bring in some measures to make sure that the EPA was effective in the work that it's doing. And these are not just issues that we read about on the front page of the newspaper regarding climate change. These are issues that affect communities all across the country. And so one of the things he talked about in great detail was these Superfund sites where you have chemicals or toxins that has in some cases been there for decades with inaction from the government. And he's really committed to making sure that these areas get cleaned up and holding his team accountable for doing so.
Well, that sounds really, really cool to have that much time with him, too, just to get a one-on-one with him like that.
It was great, and you know, if your listeners are interested, we posted the interview at the Daily Signal, dailysignal.com, so you can read the full transcript there or watch the interview. It really was neat, and I think that one of the things that I heard from our readers in response, we have so many great readers of the Daily Signal who just will share their views, is that they don't see enough of that from the news media. Everything is doom and gloom pretty much every day, and you know, you see it again this week, despite some good things that are happening with the Trump administration. And so we're going to try to do this with other leaders in government so they can have an unfiltered view of what's actually happening in some of these places, and hopefully we can ask some tough questions ourselves and bring it to them directly, because too often when you have a filter like a CNN or an NBC or MSNBC, you're getting it from a certain perspective. And Bill, let me just say one other thing. We had a longtime editor of the Wall Street Journal editorial page visit Heritage yesterday to talk about his new book, Free People, Free Markets, it's called. And he talked about the change that he observed from the time that he started in journalism, probably 50 years ago to today, where people who are interested in bringing you the truth and just the facts now want to color it with their personal opinion. And there's really been a separation. And it's one of the things that we strive to delineate at the Daily Signal, is the difference between news and commentary, which is why we label every single piece of content that we publish either news or commentary, so our audience will know what is what.
Yeah, really, really smart, Rob. Here's a headline. Nearly 1.5 million Americans dropped off the food stamp rolls since President Trump's inauguration in January of 2017, according to the latest U.S. Department of Agriculture statistics on food stamp enrollment. How is that not good news?
Well, it certainly is good news, and I think it's one of the reasons that you're seeing so much positive economic activity happen since last election day. Steve Moore, who's a colleague of mine, the noted economist, was telling me a story last week about a visit. Steve travels all across the country, and so he meets a lot of local business owners. And he was in Canton, Ohio, and told a story about a mechanic there who operates a garage and has about 20 employees, and said there was something that just clicked after Election Day when Trump won. He said, business there, the local economy has been booming. It's not just the stock market. People have a renewed sense of optimism. And I think one of the reasons for that is because there's actually some clarity and certainty about the direction that our country is going. Under the last 8 years of President Obama, they never knew what government agency was going to come forward with what regulations. So they were always fearful that they would be subject to more taxes or regulations from government. And President Trump has made clear that for every new regulation that's created, two have to come off the books. So he's made that a priority, and I think that that's helped improve the economy, and it's helped get more people off of food stamps, as you said.
So people had some money in their pocket, and businesses had some money in their accounts, but they weren't really willing to do anything about it out of fear of regulations and fear of government stepping on their progress.
That's absolutely true, and I think that's one of the reasons that this administration is so aggressively pushing tax reform because they recognize that the tax code makes the United States uncompetitive, both for corporations and small businesses. They want to simplify it for individuals so they can file their taxes on a single sheet of paper. They won't have to worry about itemizing all of their deductions because they're going to double the standard deduction that Americans can take, and that's going to put more money back in the pockets of American workers.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to hopefully continue to reduce the reliance on government programs like food stamps. And of course, I think that, you know, all of us want to see our fellow Americans succeed. And we are in a situation where I think if you want a job in this country, you can get a job. I mean, there are so many openings. I see it all the time just in Washington here. I don't know how it is in your community, Bill, but it does seem like there's a renewed sense of optimism happening in the United States. And yet we contend with, as we talked about earlier, the doom and gloom headlines of the media almost on a daily basis.
Yeah, well, Rob, I think the good news is more and better lemonade stands will return next summer, which is exciting.
That's right.
Those regulations can be nasty. Rob, let me take a break. I'll come back more. I'm speaking to Rob Bluey, editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. It's 15 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us this morning. I'll be right back. Good morning. It's 18 minutes after the hour. Speaking to Rob Bluey from the Daily Signal. And during the break, I went on the dailysignal.com website and booted up the conversation you had with Scott Pruitt. It's available to go watch it, which I'm going to do later today. But I just popped it up and there you were, Rob. And looks like you got a very snappy suit on and a nice shirt tie combination. Everything's looking good.
Well, thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about tax reform. Where are we? What's going on? What's the latest?
Yes, well, this is a big week for Congress. Both houses are back in session. Of course, you know, one house was on recess last week. The Senate passed a budget resolution last week, which means that it now goes back to the House because, as we learned in Schoolhouse Rock a long time ago, you know, both houses have to pass the same bill. So
mm-hmm.
the Senate bill is better in terms of what it allows Congress to do to maximize its ability to cut taxes. It does add to the deficit, so it's not an issue that I think a lot of conservatives look to lightly. They also recognize that tax reform has the potential to spur economic growth and hopefully ultimately increase some of the revenue that we might be losing in the short term. So the House of Representatives needs to pass this budget resolution this week. It's going to come to the floor. They expect the Republican caucus to be united on this. And once that happens, both houses of Congress, the Senate and the House, will have agreed to the framework, the budget bill, which paves the way for tax reform. So you can actually start getting into the details. Now, this is moving along at a pace that's faster because we actually thought prior to this week that the House and Senate would have to negotiate, and that could take several weeks. Well, they're bypassing that step, which means the tax reform is one step closer. And there are now some people even saying that this is something that could be done by Thanksgiving. Of course, Paul Ryan said he's going to keep people in town for Christmas if he needs to. But you know, the optimists think that it could be done even a month earlier. And, Bill, the reason that that's so important is because we want to make sure that the federal government has the opportunity to implement all of these changes that mm-hmm. the lawmakers are going to be voting on in time for next April 15th when you go to file your taxes and I file my taxes, that the new code will be in place and we can have that simplified structure and we won't necessarily have to rely on all those software programs or all the accountants to help us wade through the rules and regulations.
Yeah, I just learned you have to file taxes every year. That was a surprise. So, Rob, let me ask you, is the hurricane relief funding, is that going to be an obstacle in getting the budget figured out?
Well, so that's the Senate is also tackling that this week. So having finished the budget resolution, now they have this $36 billion bill, which is just, you know, an installment payment on the cost that it's going to ultimately take to cover the hurricane and some of the other natural disasters, California wildfires. And so we expect that to pass as well. I think that there will be bipartisan support for that type of an effort. I think that there's more to come on that in the future. This is again, the way that the Trump administration is handling this is rather than do it in one large bill, they're doing it in several tranches, I think so that they can more effectively monitor how the money is being spent and what is actually needed, whereas in the past, sometimes you had Congress appropriating a lot more money that may have ultimately been needed. So, yes, that's also on the agenda. And then, you know, we've talked about this before. Nominations continue to lag. The Senate, I see, has a couple of judges that they'll be voting on this week, two district court judges. But, again, at that pace, they're never going to come anywhere close to confirming all of the nominees that this Trump administration has put forward. You have to do more than two per week, and they have to break through this logjam somehow.
Mm-hmm. Rob, I'm curious about your take on the Florida Representative Frederica Wilson's criticism of the way President Trump handled that phone call to the widow of Army Sergeant LaDava Johnson.
Well, you know, Bill, this is one story that I don't think should be on the front page of the newspaper, because I think it's a personal and private matter between the president and the widow. But here today in Washington, it is the lead story in the Washington Post. Obviously, the widow spoke out yesterday about her interpretation of the phone call and her criticism of President Trump, who responded to say that he was respectful in the conversation. And, you know, as I think John Kelly, the chief of staff and retired highly decorated military official, said last week, who lost his own son in war, that, you know, this is really a sacred matter, that it's unfortunate that it's become such a political brawl between the parties, because there are so few Americans actually serving in the volunteer force today. A colleague of mine, Steve Bucci, has another excellent article about the situation in Niger on the Daily Signal today. And it's just surprising that, you know, less than 1% of Americans today serve. And that's a low number. It means it affects a very small community. And I think what you're seeing is, you know, some raw emotions. I mean, obviously, a life was lost here.
Mm-hmm. We just have a couple of minutes left, Rob. I'm curious, because we start the trial today for the Kate Steinle's death, and it's interesting that it's coinciding with the wall going up and that the start of that. And what color are we going to pick for the walls? And what?
That's right.
What are you? What is your take on the trial in San Francisco?
Yeah, so sanctuary cities are a big issue for this administration. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has made cracking down on these cities a high priority. I think that the trial will obviously play out, and you know, we'll be monitoring that closely on the Daily Signal as well. But I think the broader issue here is the fact that you still have some of these local communities which are refusing to abide by the rule of law. And that is frustrating for, I think, a lot of Americans who, they may have care and compassion for those who are in this country illegally, but at the same time, you know, we are a country of laws, and for these cities to openly defy the federal government and not turn over those people who you know, should be deported is frustrating. I think it's one of the things that fueled President Trump's election as president, one of the reasons why he's made immigration the centerpiece of his work in the White House. And so this trial, again, puts it back in the news, and it's something that I think Americans will be watching closely.
Rob, thanks so much for your analysis and your friendship to Faith Radio. You're just a gift. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Have a great day.
Yep. Talk to you again next week. It is 26 minutes after the hour. We'll take a break. We've got Mitch Glazer coming up, but first we'll do a little Lighten Up with Ken Davis. Be back in a minute.
If you're picking up drive-through coffee on your way to work this morning, tell them Bill says hi. He's from the Early Morning Late Show on Faith Radio.
Nice to hear Bob Stromberg's voice. Bob and I have been partners for 23 years. We've been in the comedy biz together for a long, long time. So, Ken, you don't get to hog him as your friend as well. He's also my friend. 30 minutes after the hour, we'll take a break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk to Mitch Glazer. Be back in a minute. Good morning. 25 minutes until the top of the hour. You know, we live in a me-first culture where people have a sense of entitlement. Dr. John Townsend illustrates what this looks like and shares why there's a better way to live.
Number one, it's an attitude that unfortunately is not only in the world but in our churches too. And it comes from a sense of, I shouldn't care how my behavior impacts anybody else. If I do what I do, I need to do what I want to do, no matter how it affects family and marriage and people at work. When you combine that with the other attitude of, I deserve something for nothing, I deserve special treatment, you got kind of nitroglycerin, because what happens is life as God designed it breaks down. Businesses don't work, marriages struggle, kids suffer, because a person who's living like that is really kind of living antagonistically toward God's principles of love and responsibility and humility.
That's Dr. John Townsend. If you want to hear that entire interview, go to myfaithradio.com and type in Dr. John Townsend or Overcoming Entitlement. And then we'll take a short break. And then Mitch Glazer, he is the president of Chosen People Ministries. He's going to be back with us in just a minute.
Martin Luther may have been the best known of the Protestant reformers, but there was another who was highly influential. This is Jim Garlow remembering the Protestant Reformation. John Calvin is regarded as the greatest systematic theologian of all the reformers. In 1536, Calvin released the first of many editions of his famous Institutes of the Christian Religion. At age 27, it was an amazing accomplishment that became his legacy to the Christian church. His organization of scriptures of the Bible into a systematic outline are regarded as a classic to this day. His Geneva Academy trained hundreds of young pastors. Because of widespread persecution, it was said a diploma from his school was the equivalent of a death certificate. Most French students who returned to France were arrested and killed, but the flow of students continued. Reformed denominations today point to John Calvin as their founding father. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Welcome back to the show. Just the other day, I had Dr. Mitch Glazer on from Chosen People Ministries. He's president, and we had such a lively conversation, and we realized that there are so many Christians that are interested in Israel, and we're also curious as to how we should be evangelizing to our Christian neighbors and friends, and we don't know how to do that very well. So we also want to get an update on what's going on in Israel, so I've asked Dr. Mitch Glazer to stick around and continue the conversation. Mitch, thanks for doing that. I sure appreciate it.
You're welcome, Bill. And there's a lot to share about what God's doing in Israel.
Oh, I can hardly wait. Let's get started.
Well, a recent survey, another survey, we had two millennial surveys, one of Jews and one of Christians. And now another survey has just been produced by our friends at One for Israel, Israel College of the Bible, which will appear in the next Chosen People book on the Middle East conflict that will be coming out sometime in May, probably in honor of Israel's 70th birthday. And so we asked for a survey to be done of the Messianic Jewish movement in Israel. And here's just a few highlights of what was discovered. Number one, our numbers of Israeli believers was far too low. It looks like there's probably somewhere over 25 or 30,000 believers in Israel. The numbers we were using were probably 10 to 12,000. Now, this is not evangelistic, because this was a real survey.
Okay.
I mean, sometimes Christians love to pump up the numbers. I don't really like doing that. I know you don't.
Yeah, I don't.
But I want to be accurate. And so
It's humble to underplay, but it can also be wrong. And so this was a major survey of hundreds of Jewish believers in Israel and of congregational leaders. And what we discovered is we thought there were about 175 or so congregations or larger fellowships in Israel. We were wrong. It's about 300. Many of them are over 100. And so we sort of averaged it out at about 100, which is how we came up with the 30,000 number.
Mm-hmm.
A demographer, a secular Israeli demographer from the University of Tel Aviv, vetted all of the figures and all of the methodology used for the survey. So we're confident that this is a pretty accurate survey. And so we're incredibly excited. Just to give you an idea, my first trip to Israel in 1976, probably I met most of the 50 to 100 Jewish believers in Israel.
Yeah, what a party that was.
Yeah, and half of them had just emigrated from Brooklyn. So, I mean, it was quite something. There was a survey done about 25 years ago, and when things were kind of growing a little bit more. And again, just over 100 Messianic congregations or fellowships. So this seems to have tripled in the last quarter century.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another fact that's really interesting, about 60% of the congregations and the Jewish believers, it looks like, speak Russian as their first language, which means that the movement that happened after Perestroika in 1989, that was global. We had it in Brooklyn, we've had it in Germany, we've had it in Los Angeles, we've had it in Israel. So there were 1.4 million Russian Jews who moved to Israel after Perestroika, a few before, and some came in knowing the Lord, but many found the Lord in Israel. And so this is very significant, and what's even more significant is the second generation, which we're really into right now, of Russian Jewish believers all grew up in Israel. They speak Hebrew as their first language. They've all been in the army. In other words, they're Israelis.
Wow.
And so, you know, it's when you have a critical mass, more things happen. And so we're very excited about this. Now, it's also our opinion that Israeli young adults are more open to the gospel, just like millennials here in the United States. And here's one of the reasons we know. Over the last 2.5 years, Chosen People has been doing a Facebook campaign in Israel offering our Isaiah 53 Explain book, which, by the way, any of those listeners on the show can have a copy of the Isaiah 53 Explain book for free. It's almost a 200-page book, and you can go to Isaiah53.com and order a copy of the book. Bill, that's my offer. They can have it for free. There's only one catch. We want them to read it and then try and give it away to a Jewish friend. So
I love it. I have my copy, Mitch, just so you know. And it's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing.
There you go. But we're happy for people to have that and to share it with others, and they'll learn more. So we've been doing the same thing in Israel with Hebrew Facebook ads and a Hebrew copy of Isaiah 53 Explained. And over the last 2 years, we've had over 3,000 Israelis order the book, which is awesome. I mean, just amazing. But something happened in the last month and a half, and we think it's kind of the fruition of things. We changed from a static Facebook ad to a video ad, admittedly, a very cute video ad. And we offered the book, and in the last month and a half, we've had over 1,000 people order the book.
Oh, my. In the last month and a half?
Last month and a half.
Wow.
So this is called the land of impossible follow-up. I mean, we have a good team in Israel, but I don't even know how they're going to manage it. But we're going to get people the books, and hopefully some of it, follow-up will be online and through emails, and we'll meet with people as we can. So and what's interesting, because it's Facebook, we can tell where most of the respondents are from. And they're from the greater Tel Aviv area, although we do have some from Jerusalem and Haifa and other places. But but the majority are from the greater Tel Aviv area, which is known to be more secular.
Mm-hmm.
And from the responses, we seem to be getting a lot of responses from more secular Jewish young people. And demographically, they definitely seem to be swinging, sometimes even younger than millennials. And they're open to the gospel. So all I can tell you, Bill, is that something's happening right now in Israel. And I've got more to say, but I want to stop for a second and give you a chance for a question.
Yeah, actually, this pause is actually a perfect place just to take a short break. And then when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Mitch Glazer from Chosen People Ministries. We'll take a short break and be right back. Welcome back to the show. I'm speaking to Dr. Mitch Glazer. He's president of Chosen People Ministries, and we are getting a very exciting update on what's going on in Israel. And Mitch, I know that you get over there pretty regular, once a year, twice a year. How often do you get there?
I usually get there probably about three times a year, Bill, and usually during the summer I'm there for 1 or 2 months.
Oh, that's fantastic. And just the additional interest in what's going on for the gospel right now is just so thrilling. And you had a little bit more to say about that, and I'm anxious to hear.
One of the things that we've been seeing is all I can do is describe it as a second generation movement. Now, I do see I know this, we're not supposed to minister to these kids, and we don't exactly a little, you know, it's online. But there seems to be a great interest among high school students, Israeli high school students, in Jesus. I can't explain it. It's just there. We are seeing among the believers who are a little older, maybe out of the army, 21, 22 and up, what we are seeing is a second generation movement. And I'm talking about probably close to 1,000 kids, maybe more, of Israeli young people who have really gone through the army and who are walking with the Lord and who are serving the Lord. And they grew up in believing homes. Now, here's the difference with these kids. Their parents maybe made Aliyah. They immigrated to Israel. A lot of them are children of Holocaust survivors and others. And they came to faith in Jesus, my generation, and maybe the Xers. They came to faith, and they never feel like they've been accepted by Israeli society. They've been marginalized. And even though they served in the army, in the army, for years, you couldn't get a certain security clearance to become an officer because you were a believer in Jesus. If they knew you were a believer, you were held back. Mm. So there was definite prejudice, without a doubt. Those things have been relaxed. Israeli young people who are believers are taking very responsible positions in the army, which means when they get out, they get more responsible positions in secular life because the army is a very defining experience for young Israelis and for employers.
Mm-hmm.
And so these young people now say, I'm Israeli. I'm not going to accept marginalization. I am Jewish. Don't you dare tell me I'm not Jewish or I'm not an Israeli. I fought for my country. I was raised speaking Hebrew, and I'm not going to accept moving to the periphery of society. I'm going to stand right in the middle as an Israeli, as a Jew, and I'm going to proclaim Jesus as the Messiah. And Bill, it's incredible. These young people are lawyers and doctors and army officers and nurses, and they are standing for the Lord in the midst of a society that is still, to some degree, opposed to what they believe. But these young people are making stands that we parents never thought would be possible.
It's exciting. That's mind-blowing, Mitch. And what we have a lot to learn from them, because how we need to be as bold as they are in this country.
We do. It's just in this country, We have a lot of second-generation believers, but that's not a big deal because we've had second and third and fourth and fifth and sixth. But in Israel, it's unique. I think what we can learn from the Israeli young people is to fan the flames of our own personal relationship with Jesus, to not care what society thinks about us, and to live for the Lord and to stand on the firm foundation of the Word of God and make a stand for Jesus in the marketplace or wherever we are and allow God to pick up the pieces and allow God to give us the strength to do it. And I think that if Israelis can do it, we can do it.
No kidding. Hey, Mitch, we just have a few minutes left. Can you give us a little brush-up course on how we can more effectively share Christ with our Jewish friends and coworkers?
Yeah, Bill, of course. Number one, friendship is the key. In all probability, in the workplace or in school or in the neighborhood, your Jewish friends already know there's something strange about you if you're living for the
yeah.
Lord. So they may as well explain it, you know. And so they can see the difference. And even though, you know, Christians are so self-critical, but you're nicer than most people, you are more self-sacrificing, your home life is better, your kids are more well-behaved, you just have higher standards, which is why we all give our kids a tough time. But Jewish people can see the difference. And so build that friendship. And then at the right moment, create an opportunity where it's comfortable for the Jewish person to ask you questions about what you believe. One of the ways to do that is to ask them questions about what they believe. And so move from secular to sacred topics by questions, not preaching. And so ask them questions about the Jewish holidays. Ask them questions about what's going on in Israel, and that might create a climate whereby they can ask, they'll feel comfortable enough to then ask you questions about why you are the way you are. And so friendship, love, kindness, interest in Jewish life, these are all factors that make a big difference. And then when they're interested, tell them to go to ifoundshalom.com, where we now have almost 70 Messianic Jewish video testimonies that I think are just fantastic.
I bet I've watched half of them.
They're good, aren't they?
I start watching and I don't stop.
I know. We just shot another 18.
They're so good and entertaining and engaging and real and authentic. No, I'm pretty hooked.
Well, I appreciate it. Now all we got to do is get all our Jewish friends hooked. First one's free. So and all you need to do now is to say, you know, you seem to be interested in this, and let me send you this URL so that you can hear from other Jewish people how they came to faith in Yeshua or Jesus
yeah.
as the Messiah. And I think that's you know, let us speak on your behalf and help you out.
That's become one of my secret weapons, Mitch, is just I send people to that website.
Oh, that gives me great joy, Bill.
It's true.
And I hope others will as
yeah.
well. So.
And the one thing I'm hearing, Mitch, through all of this, it is the word probably listen. Listen to your Jewish friends. Let them tell their stories. Let them talk.
Yes. Good evangelism, particularly with a Jewish person, is a dialogue. Because remember, Jewish people are still under the misimpression that Christianity in general is hostile towards the Jewish people. And that Christians really did persecute Jewish people. They don't know the difference between a born-again Christian and a nominal Christian. And so it's only through our lives and our testimony that they see it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you also good to get prepared to be able to share Messianic prophecy and you know, the Roman road goes Old Testament, you know? So it's good to be able to share that. And you can go to the chosenpeople.com website. We have more helpful information on sharing Old Testament prophecy than you'll ever be able to use. And in our latest newsletter, Bill, we actually address issues like how can I believe in Jesus in light of the Holocaust, and how can I be Jewish and believe in Jesus and believe that God could become a man, because there's a theological problem that Jewish people have with the incarnation.
Yeah.
How can I believe in the Trinity? Again, Jewish people have a real theological problem. So there is meat to the sandwich, or corned beef to the sandwich, on our website.
Uh-huh.
And And so getting a Jewish person interested is the hardest thing. We have all the information you need as well to train you if there are deeper theological and biblical questions.
Mitch, you are the gift that keeps on giving. Thank you so much for being on the program. You can go and see more of that at chosenpeople.com. Dr. Mitch Glazer, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Blessings to you, Bill.
We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes.
The early bird catches the worm. The really early bird catches the early morning late show with Bill Arnold on Faith Radio.
Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me.
Connecting faith and life together.
In today's times and with all the turmoil in the world and just in people's homes day to day, God's truth is heard, people's lives are touched, people are even brought to Christ for the first time for an eternal difference. There is no greater investment that we could put out there right now for the kingdom's work. There isn't anything we're going to get a greater return on our investment, dollar for dollar.
It's the intersection of faith and life. Faith Radio.
Good morning. It's a couple minutes until the top of the hour. I sure enjoy Dr. Mitch Glazer, and thank you to Rob Bluey, who is my guest in the first half hour from the Daily Signal. You might want to go on thedailysignal.com and check out his interview he had with Pruitt. It's there. It's posted. You can go watch it. You can see Rob Bluey in person. So coming up in the next hour, we have Ben Johnson from the Acton Institute and also Ron Deal from Family Life Blended. That's going to be our second hour coming up. I saw on the news that Laura Bush and Tim Tebow are going to appear on the Fixer Upper final season. Hard to believe they live in Fixer Uppers, Laura Bush and Tim Tebow. They live in Fixer Uppers. I live in a total teardown. Got a great second hour coming up. Thanks for being with us. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.